Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, text number 6 and 7, the passing away of Bhishma Dev. And I'm also going to read, as a continuation of that, number 8 and then number 9, because these are just really long purports explaining all the different personalities that came when Bhishma Dev was there lying on a bed of arrows. So it's describing all the different ones. So there's quite a lot of reading. But then in the last verse, there's it's one of the most important, or one of a very important verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I just want to read that one. It's so pertinent to things that are going on at the moment, so I thought I would read that one as well. So you'll have to bear with me. So there's a lot of reading. It's a lot of different characters that are being described. Prabhupada gives about a 2.5 page purport to these ones, so just bear with me. If you're feeling a little sleepy, just stand up. So this is text 6 and 7 first off. Parvato Narado Dunyo Bhagavan Badarayana Rihatasvo Bharadvaja Sasishyorunukasuta Vashishta Indra Pramadas Srito Grisa Madhosita Kakshivan Gotamo Trishcha Koshikasta Sudarshana Parvato Narado Dumyo Bhagavan Bhadadayana Brihadvaso Paratvaja Sashi Shorunukasuta Vashishta Indra Pramadas Srito Grisa Madhosita Kakshivan Gotamo Trishcha Kausikasta Sudarshana Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. All the sages, like Parvata Muni, Dumya, Vyas, the incarnation of God, Brihaspa, Bharadvaja, Parasuram, the disciples, Vashishta, Indra Pramadha, Trita, Vistamada, Asita, Kakshivan, Gautama, Atri, Kaushika, and Sudarshan were all were present before by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As I said, these are long purports describing all these different individuals, and then the next verse goes on to also describe other individuals that turned up to this event. So I'll just read this out. Again, if anybody's feeling a little tired, just stand up. So first off is Parvata Muni, purport by His Divine Grace. Parvata Muni is considered to be one of the oldest sages. He's almost always a constant companion of Narad Muni. They are also spacemen, competent to travel in the air without the help of any material vehicle. Parvata Muni is also a Deva Rishi, or a great sage amongst the demigods, like Narad. He was present along with Narad at the sacrificial ceremony of Maharaj Janmajaya, the son of Maharaj Parikshit. In this sacrifice, all the snakes of the world were to be killed. Parvata Muni and Narad Muni are called Gandharvas, also because they can travel in the air singing the glories of the Lord. Since they can travel in the air, they observe Draupadi's Swayamvar ceremony, selecting her husband from the air. Like Narad Muni, Parvata Muni also used to visit the royal assembly in heaven of King Indra. As a Gandharva, sometimes he visited the royal assembly of Kuvera, one of the most important demigods. He is the lord of wealth, Lord Kuvera. Both Narad and Parvata were once in trouble with the daughter of Maharaj Srinjaya. Maharaj Srinjaya got the benediction of a son by Parvata Muni. Narada Muni is inevitably associated with the incarnation, with the narrations of the Puranas. He is described as the Bhagavatam. He is described in the Bhagavatam. In his previous life, he was the son of a maidservant. But by good association and with pure devotees, he became enlightened in devotional service. In his next life, he became the perfect man, comparable with himself only. In the Mahabharata, his name is mentioned in many places. He is the principal Devarishi, or the chief amongst the demigods. He is the son and disciple of Brahmaji, and from him the disciplic succession in the line of Brahma has been spread. He initiated Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and many celebrated devotees of the Lord. He initiated even Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedantic literatures. And from Vyasadeva, Madhvacharya was initiated, and thus Madhva Sampradaya, in which the Gaudiya Sampradaya is also included, has spread all over the universe. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu belongs to this Madhva Sampradaya. Therefore, Brahmaji, Narad, Vyas, down to Madhva, Chaitanya, and the Goswamis all belong to the same line of disciplic succession. Naradaji has instructed many kings from time immemorial. In the Bhagavatam, we can see that he has instructed Prahlad Maharaj while he was in the womb of his mother, and he instructed Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, as well as Maharaj Yudhisthira. Dumya, a great sage who practiced severe penances at Uttachaka, Tirtha, and was appointed royal priest of the Pandava kings. He acted as the priest in many religious functions of the Pandava Samskara, and also each of the Pandavas was attended by him at the betrothal of Draupadi. He was present even during the exile of the Pandavas and was used to advise them in circumstances when they were perplexed. He instructed them how to live incognito for 1 year, and his instructions were strictly followed by the Pandavas during that time. His name is mentioned also when the general funeral ceremony was performed after the battle of Kurukshetra. In the Anusana Parva of the Mahabharata, 127.15.16, he gave a very elaborate religious instruction to Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was actually the right type of priest, the right type of priest of a householder. for he could guide the Pandavas on the right path of religion. A priest is meant for guiding the householder progressively in the right path of ashram dharma, or the occupational duty of a particular caste. There is practically no difference between the family priest and the spiritual master. The sages, saints and brahmanas were especially meant for such functions. Bhadradraina Vasudeva. He is known as Krishna, Krishna Dvapayana, Satyavati Sutta, Parasara, Parasaratyamaya, Bhadra Rayana, and Veda Vyas, etc. He was the son of Mahamuni Parasa in the womb of Satyavati prior to his betrothal with Maharaj Santanu, the father of the great general grandfather Bhishma. He is a powerful incarnation of Narayan, and he broadcast the Vedic wisdom to the world. As such, Vyasadeva is offered respects before one chants the Vedic scriptures, especially the Puranas. Sukadeva Goswami was his son, and rishis like Vaishmanapayana was his disciple for different branches of the Vedas. He is the author of the great epic Mahabharata and the great transcendental literature Bhagavatam. The Brahma Sutras, the Vedanta Sutras, or the Bhadra Narayan Sutras were compiled by him. Among sages, he is the most respected author by dint of severe penances. When he wanted to record the great epic Mahabharata for the welfare of all people in the age of Kali, he was feeling the necessity of a powerful writer who could take up his dictation. By the order of Brahmaji, Sri Ganesh took up the charge of noting down the dictation on the condition that Vyasadeva would not stop dictation for a moment. The Mahabharata was thus compiled by the joint endeavour of Vyas and Ganesh. By the order of his mother, Satyavati, who was later married to Maharaj Shantanu, and by the request of Bhishmadeva, the eldest son of Maharaj Shantanu, by his first wife, the Ganges, he begot three brilliant sons, whose names are Dhritarashtra, Pandu and Vidura. The Mahabharata was compiled by Vyasadeva after the battle of Kurukshetra and after the death of all the heroes of the Mahabharata. It was first spoken in the royal assembly of Maharaj Janmijaya, the son of Maharaj Parikshit. Brihadasva, an ancient sage who used to meet Maharaj Yudhisthira now and then. First of all, he met Maharaj Yudhisthira at Kambavan. This sage narrated the history of Maharaj Nala. There is another Brihadasva who is the son of Ishvaku dynasty. Mahabharata Vana Parva 209-45. Next one is Bharadvaja. He is one of the seven great sage rishis who was present at the time of the birth ceremony of Arjuna. The powerful rishi sometimes undertook severe penances on the shores of the Ganges, and his ashram is still celebrated at Prayagatham. It is learned that this rishi, while taking bath in the Ganges, happened to meet Gritachi, one of the beautiful society girls of heaven, and thus he discharged semen, which was kept and preserved in an earthen pot, and from which Drona was born. So Dronacharya is the son of Bharadvaja Muni. Others say that Bharadvaja was the father of Drona. Others say that Bharadvaja, the father of Drona, is a different person from Maharaj Bharadvaja. He was a great devotee of Brahma. Once he approached Dronacharya and requested him to stop the battle of Kurukshetra. Next one is Parasurama or Ranukasuta. He is the son of Maharaj Jamanagni and Srimati Ranuka. Thus he is also known as Ranukasuta, a powerful incarnation of God. And he killed the Kshatriya community as a whole 21 times. With the blood of the Kshatriyas, he pleased the souls of his forefathers. Later on, he underwent severe penances at the Mahendra Parvata. After taking the whole earth from the Kshatriyas. He gave it in charity to Kashyapa Muni. Parasuram instructed the Dhanura Veda, or the science of fighting, to Dronacharya because he happened to be a Brahmana. He was present during the coronation of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and he celebrated the function along with other great rishis. Parashuram is so old that he met both Ram and Krishna at different times. He fought with Ram, but he accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also praised Arjuna when he saw him with Krishna. When Bhishma refused to marry Amba, who wanted him to become her husband, Amba met Parashuram, and by her request only, he asked Bhishma to accept her as his wife. Bhishma refused to obey his order, although he is one of his spiritual masters of Bhishmadev. Parashuram fought with Bhishmadev when Bhishma neglected his warning. Both of them fought very severely, and at last Parashuram was pleased with Bhishma and gave him the benediction of becoming the greatest fighter in the world. Next one is Vashishta. The great celebrated sage amongst the Brahmanas, well known in the Brahmastri, Vashishtadev. He is a prominent figure in both the Ramayana and the Mahabharata periods. He celebrated the coronation of the personality of Godhead Sri Ram, and he was present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He could approach all the higher and lower planets, and his name is also mentioned with the history of Hiranyakashipu. There was a great tension between him and Vishwamitra, who wanted his Kadambahenu, wish-fulfilling cow. Vashishtha Muni refused to spare his Kamadhenu, and for this Vishwamitra killed his 100 sons. As a perfect Brahmana, he tolerated all the taunts of Vishwamitra. Once he tried to commit suicide on account of Vishwamitra's torture. But all his attempts were unsuccessful. He jumped from a hill, but the stones that he fell on became like a stack of cotton, and thus he was saved. He jumped into the ocean, but the waves just washed him ashore. He jumped into a river, but the river washed him ashore. Thus all his suicide attempts were unsuccessful. He is also one of the seven rishis and husband of Arundhati, the famous star. The next one is Indra Pramhada, another celebrated rishi. That's all he gets. Trita, celebrated rishi. Next one is Trita, one of the three sons of Prajapati Gautama. And he was the third son, and his other two brothers were known as Ekat and Vita. All the brothers were great sages and strict followers of the principles of religion. By dint of severe penance, they were promoted to Brahmaloka, the planet where Brahmaji lives. Once Trita Muni fell into a well, he was an organizing worker of many sacrifices, and as one of the great sages, he also came to show respect to Bhishmaji on his deathbed. He was one of the seven great sages in the Varuna Loka. He hailed from the western countries of the world, such as, most probably, he belonged to the European countries. At that time, the whole world was under one Vedic culture. So, Trita was our western sage during this great Vedic period. Yay, Trita! Gritasmada. The next one is Gritasmada, one of the sages of the heavenly kingdom. He was a close friend of Indra, the king of heaven, and was as great as Brihaspati. He used to visit the royal assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and he also visited the palace, the place where Bhishmadev breathed his last. Sometimes he explained the glories of Lord Shiva before Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was the son of Vitrahavya, and he resembled the features of the body of Indra. Sometimes the enemies of Indra mistook him to be Indra and arrested him. He was a great scholar of the Rig Veda, and thus he was highly respected by the Brahmana community. He lived a life of celibacy and was powerful in every respect. Next one is Asita. There was a king of the same name But herein, the Asita mentioned is the Asita Devala Rishi, a great powerful sage of the time. He explained to his father 1,500,000 verses from the Mahabharata, and he was one of the members in the snake sacrifice of Maharaj Janmijaya. He was also present during the coronation ceremony of Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with other great sages, rishis. He also gave Maharaj Yudhisthira instructions while he was on an Anjana hill, and was also one of the devotees of Lord Shiva. Kakshivan is the next one. One of the sons of Gautama Muni and the father of the great sage Chandakoushika. He was one of the members of parliament of Maharaj Yudhisthira. The next one is Atri. Atri Muni was a great Brahmana sage and was one of the mental sons of Brahmaji. Brahmaji is so powerful that simply by thinking of a son, he can have it. These sons are known as Manasaputra. Out of seven Manasaputras of Brahmaji and out of the seven great Brahmana sages, Atri was one. In his family, the great Pachetas were also born. Atri Muni had two Kshatriya sons who became kings. King Artamha is one of them. He is counted as one of the 21 Prajapatis. His wife's name was Anasuya, and he helped Maharaj Parikshit in his great sacrifices. Next one is Kaushika, one of the permanent Rishi members in the Royal Assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He sometimes met Lord Krishna, and there are several other sages of the same name. Next is Sudarshana. This wheel, which is accepted by the personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, as his personal weapon, is the most powerful weapon, greater than the Brahmastra or similar other destructive weapons. In some of the Vedic literatures, it is said that Agni Dev, the fire god, presented this weapon to Lord Krishna. But factually, this weapon is eternally carried by the Lord. Agni Dev presented this weapon to Krishna in the same way that Rukmini was given by Maharaj Rukma to the Lord. The Lord accepts such presentations from his devotees, even though such presentations are eternally his property. There is an elaborate description of this weapon in the Adipava of the Mahabharata, and Lord Sri Krishna used this weapon to kill Shishupal, a rival of the Lord. He also killed Salva by this weapon, and sometimes he wanted his friend Arjuna to use it to kill his enemies. In Mahabharata, Virata Parva 56.3. So that's a description in that particular purport. Then Prabhupada goes on to describe another group. So if you don't mind, we'll get the whole family, we'll get everybody in context who's there. So the next verse is text 8. Anye cha munayo brahman brahma vata dayo mala shishya upetya akamu kashyapa agir sadhaya. Translation. And many others like Sukadeva Goswami and other purified souls, Kashyapa and Agni Rasa and others, all accompanied by their respective disciples, arrived there. Sukadeva Goswami, the famous son and disciple of Sri Vyasadeva, who taught him first the Mahabharata and then the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami recited 1,400,000 verses of the Mahabharata in the council of the Gandharvas, Yakshas and Rakshasas, and he recited Srimad Bhagavatam for the first time in the presence of Maharaj Parikshit. He thoroughly studied all the Vedic literatures from his great father. Thus he was completely purified soul by dint of his extensive knowledge in the principles of religion. From Mahabharata's Sabha Parva 4.11, it is understood that he was also present in the Royal Assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and at the fasting of Maharaj Parikshit, as a bona fide disciple of Sri Vyasadeva, he inquired from his father very extensively about religious principles and spiritual values. And his great father was also satisfied. His great father also satisfied him by teaching him the yoga system by which one can attain the spiritual kingdom. the differences between fruitive work and empiric knowledge, the ways and means of attaining spiritual realization, the four ashramas, namely the student life, the householder life, retired life, and the renounced life, the sublime position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the process of seeing Him eye to eye, the bona fide candidate for receiving knowledge, the consideration of the five elements, the unique position of intelligence, the consciousness of the material nature and the living entity, the symptoms of the self-realized soul, the working principles of material body, the symptoms of the influential modes of nature, the tree of perpetual desire, and psychic activities. Sometimes he went to the sun planet with the permission of his father and Naradji. Descriptions of this travel in space are given in the Santi Parva of the Mahabharata 322. At last he attained the transcendental realm. He is known by different names like Araneya, Aruni Sutta, Vaishaki, and Vaishatyamaja. Next one is Kashyapa. One of the Prajapatis, the son of Marichi, and one of the sons-in-law of Prajapati Daksha. He is the father of the gigantic bird Garuda, another one, who was given elephants and tortoises as edibles. Yum. He married 13 daughters of Prajapati Daksha, and their names are Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kasta, Arista, Surasa, Ila, Muni, Krodashvasa, Tamra, Surabi, Sarama, and Timi. He begot many children, both demigods and demons, by those wives. From his first wife, Aditi, all the 12 Adityas were born, and one of them is Vamana, the incarnation of Godhead. This great sage Kashyapa was also present at the time of Arjuna's birth. He received the presentation of the whole world from Parashuram, and later he asked Parashuram to go out of the world. His other name is Aristanemi. He lived on the northern side of the universe. And the last one is Agnirasa. He is the son of Maharaj Angira, and is known as Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods. It is said that Dronacharya was his partial incarnation. Sukracharya was the spiritual master of the demons, and Brihaspati challenged him. His son is Kacha, and he delivered the fire weapon first to Bharadraja Muni. He begot 6 sons, like the fire god, by his wife Chandramasi, one of the reputed stars. He could travel in space, and therefore he could present himself even in the planet of Brahmaloka and Indraloka. He advised the king of heaven, Indra, about conquering the demons. Once he cursed Indra, who thus had to become a hog on the earth and was unwilling to return to heaven. Such is the power of the attraction of the illusory energy. Even a hog does not wish to part with its earthly possessions in exchange for the heavenly kingdom. He was the religious preceptor of the natives of different planets. Any questions? No? Everybody get that? So, text 9. Oh, that's a confirmation. Text 9. Tan sametan mahabhagan upalabhya vasutama pujajam asadharmajo deshakala vibhagavit. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace. Bhishma Dev, who was the best amongst the 8 Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there, for he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. He must have been such an amazing personality, Bhishma Dev. Purport. And this is a very important verse that Prabhupada often mentions. Expert religionists know perfectly well how to adjust religious principles in terms of time and place. All the great acharyas or religious preachers or reformers of the world execute their mission by adjustment of religious principles in terms of time and space. There are different climates and situations in different parts of the world, and if one has to discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord, he must be expert in adjusting things in terms of time and space, a time and place. Bhishma Dev was one of the 12 great authorities in preaching this cult of devotional service, and therefore he could receive and welcome all-powerful sages assembled there at his deathbed from all parts of the universe. He was certainly unable at that time to welcome and receive them physically, because he was neither at his home nor in normal healthy condition. But he was quite fit by the activities of his sound mind, and therefore he could utter sweet words with hearty expressions, and all of them were well received. One can perform one's duty by physical work, by mind, and by words. And he knew well how to utilize them in a proper place, and therefore there was no difficulty for him to receive them, although physically unfit. Om Agyana Timiranda Syakananjana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasma Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Hridayananda Goswami Niti Namine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pracharine Nevise Sushunivani Prasthaya Shatarine. Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So it's interesting how things come up just at the right time. You know, I haven't given class for a while, and there's been something that's been bugging me for a while. And it just so happened that when I read a little further that this report came up. This first part especially, expert religionists know perfectly well how to adjust religious principles in terms of time and place. All great acharyas or religious preachers or reformers of the world execute their mission by adjustment of religious principles in terms of time and space. There are different climates and different situations in different parts of the world, and if one has to discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord, he must be expert in adjusting things in terms of time and place. So, you're no doubt aware, if you're on the internet and stuff, there's a lot of criticism going on. All different sorts of criticism about should we be doing this, should we be doing that. And I just wrote some points that I wanted to mention, because a lot of it also affects my service. And as communications minister, doing communication work, working with interfaith, working with the Hindu community, there's been criticism around the place. Should ISKCON be going down this track? Should we, you know, there's that statement that they say, the Hinduization of ISKCON, and that sort of thing going on. So I just wanted to mention it, and I just wanted to jot down some points, just to for myself personally also, but to also express some ideas. And if anybody has some questions on that afterwards, please put them up. So the topic that is mentioned here is the adjustment of religious principles in terms of time and place. Srila Prabhupada made insightful adjustments in many instances. We are all aware of that. Srila Prabhupada was never a fanatic, never fanatical in any way, shape or form. He was a very moderate person. In the light of certain individuals and groups that are currently commenting on different aspects of Krishna consciousness, he made practical decisions and adjustments to help transplant Vedic teachings and culture into a Western mindset. This is not a minor task. Nobody had ever done this before. How you can bring Vedic culture to the Western world. Prabhupada was so expert. Of course, being a self-realized acharya, he had the latitude to make decisions such as reducing the number of rounds that we daily chant. For Bhaktisiddhanta and all the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the standard was 64. We all know that. But for a Westerner to actually chant 64 rounds is very, very difficult to do. Has anybody ever chanted 64 rounds?
Mm.
Yeah? It's a long process, isn't it? If you were to work as well as do different other things, as well as preach, it'd be a lot of things to do. So Prabhupada was so self-realized, so completely in touch, that he could make the adjustment and encapsulate the potency of 64 rounds into 16 rounds if we chant them properly. This is the power of the realized acharya. This is the magnanimous and potency of Srila Prabhupada. He could do that. Another thing which Srila Prabhupada did, which was completely off the wall, hadn't been heard of, he gave brahminical initiation to women. He actually uplifted the women class. In the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, no women were allowed to do seva puja, even cook for the deity in the temple. It's unheard of. So Bhaktisiddhanta used, you know how Bhaktisiddhanta was the first in our line after Bhaktivinoda Thakur that actually established direct procedures as far as sannyas worship, temple worship, and he basically got that information from the Ramanuja Acharya Sampradaya. And so he instilled that in the Gaudiya Sampradaya that we practice today, and they also have that understanding that women aren't allowed to do anything. Srila Prabhupada went even further than allowing women to cook or do, you know, make garlands or do deity, sew for the deities or anything. Prabhupada went further and gave full access to deity worship, except in some of his temples in India, where he felt the criticism by the religionists and the old Vaishnavas, the orthodoxy, might pose a problem for his mission there. So it wasn't that he was against women doing this service in India, but just to appease the so-called intelligentsia of that particular region, he said, okay, we won't do it here. Now, some may say that with this growth, eventually, perhaps women will even take sannyas. And there are arguments for this, for and against, within our society, even to this very day. So while we have to be careful not to change what Prabhupada gave us, he gave us many examples of how practicality in Krishna's service supersedes strict rules and regulations. Prabhupada did many things to accommodate our Western mentality, from having Western toilets in his temples, was unheard of before. So we had to have our toilets when we went to India, you know. So he arranged that. He allowed men and women to live in the same communities together, unheard of before. So Prabhupada was so radical in these ways. He was progressive and innovative in his preaching, doing different things that were, you know, using dictaphones, using television, using videos, anything. Prabhupada was so on the ball. He is absolutely tickled pink by the internet, by so much communication that someone can be giving a class in Mayapur and we can download it, not even download it, we can watch it instantaneously any part of the world. Prabhupada loved this. He gave permission to his book distributors to wear Western dress and for men to even wear wigs to hide the fact that they were devotees. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada gave that sanction. So in the early days, it's much more accepted that a person has short hair nowadays, because most middle-aged men, when they're starting to go bald, they think, well, it looks cool if you just buzz up. So now it's acceptable. But back in the 60s and 70s, where all the rage was long hair and sideburns and all this kind of stuff, if you saw a person completely shaved bald, it was just like, my God, what are you doing? So we actually had to wear wigs. And believe me, if you're talking about austerity, on a hot summer's day, when you're out there doing sankirtan, you had to wear this mop on your head. My God, so uncomfortable, so difficult. Gangeshwara Prabhu used to do one step even better. He had such a lousy looking wig that he used to wear the wig and he put a hat on top of the wig. How he ever managed, I never know. But we used to wear these wigs, which were quite interesting in several different occasions, you know, like you would be doing sankirtan. At that stage we were doing paraphernalia sankirtan, and we had to hide the fact in the sense that we were devotees, so we did this paraphernalia sankirtan, and you would be in a pub selling either a candle or a painting or something, and somebody would brush past you and the wig would go, whoop! You'd be walking up. Now you didn't know, but it looked like you had a wrap over, you know, or something, you know, it's like... And somebody would come up and say, hey mate, your rug is a little crooked. Or they would come up to you behind and straighten your wig up. So anyway. And Prabhupada completely condoned this. And comments on Western... comment on Western dresses as a devotee, there, even to this very day, if it benefits our preaching, it's quite okay to wear Western clothes. You know, we don't always have to wear dhoti and kurta and sari. We can actually, if it facilitates the preaching, we can wear Western clothes. One has to adjust one's dress for the occasion. Like when I'm doing chaplaincy work, it is much more convenient for me to wear pants. I mean, if I wore a dhoti into the hospital system, I'd be catching onto everything and medicines would go everywhere. And it's just not practical. Similarly, Prabhupada also said, you know, because it's a devotee always has to wear tilak. But Prabhupada said, if you can't wear the tilak, the urban tilak, wear water tilak. You know, it's in your heart that you are applying Om Keshavaya Namaha. The rest of your body is covered. You can have that, but for practical purposes, sometimes we have to wear water tilak. Because there's nothing worse when you're trying to preach to someone, when you're relating to someone, when you're doing business with someone as a devotee and you've got tilak on, and the person is not looking at you or hearing what you're saying anymore, but he's looking at the tilak, which is half crumbling off your face at times. You know, have you ever had that? People are just looking at you and they're going, what's happening? What is that? I had one person actually that came up to me one time and said, did that hurt? What? She said, when they branded you, did that hurt? So they actually thought that they went, when you became a devotee. And I was like, so we have to be practical. We have to use water too much. So Prabhupada was quite okay with that. You know, the essence of it is that we actually present and preach Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was just so progressive and innovative. Prabhupada always made decisions based on what would benefit the mass of people, even if it didn't conform to the Vedic standards. This is Prabhupada. Even if it didn't conform to the Vedic standards, whatever was of benefit to the mass of people. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, to broadcast the cult of Krishna consciousness, one has to learn the possibility of renunciation in terms of country, time, and candidate. So in what country you're born, the timing, meaning, you know, like the age that you're living in, and the candidate. Is the person, has he or she got a particular proclivity for devotional service? A candidate for Krishna consciousness in the Western countries should be taught about the renunciation of material existence, but one should teach candidates from a country like India in a different way. The teacher has to consider time, candidate, and country. He must avoid the principles of niyama graha. That is, he should not try to perform the impossible. What is possible in one country may not be possible in another country. The acharya's duty is to accept the essence of devotional service. It's like we can't preach wholeheartedly in an uninhibited way in places like China. But yet the preaching is going on there and it's making great effect. Similarly, it happened also in Russia. We couldn't preach in a full, upright way in Russia for a long period of time, and we had to do it in a clandestine sort of way. But eventually we were able to overcome those difficulties and do it properly.
In the Middle East? In
the Middle East also, in the Muslim countries, absolutely. So it is important to see Srila Prabhupada tried different strategies for spreading Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada always tried different strategies. Always. If something wasn't working, Prabhupada would be quick to change it. This is an amazing thing. So here you have the Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON, and he would take advice from his disciples. Is that working? No, it's not working, Srila Prabhupada. Perhaps we can do it this way. Do it that way. So, for example, public chanting, Harinam, was a successful strategy for spreading Krishna consciousness in the West. But when Prabhupada had his disciples introduce Harinam Sankirtan in India, it was not effective. Rather, it created a negative impression of our movement. Despite the fact that Lord Chaitanya had propagated Krishna consciousness throughout India by Harinam Kirtan 500 years ago. Prabhupada was able to assess the situation, he saw the situation, and devised a program of life membership in India which proved to be much more successful. Much more successful. So this is the whole thing, time, place, changing, moving things. Now we are pioneers of this movement. And Prabhupada and Krishna have given us a great responsibility. Before passing away, Prabhupada said that half of his work was done and that he was leaving the remaining half to us. Prabhupada was referring to the establishment of Varnashram Dham. When he passed it on to us, he didn't just pass it on to his immediate disciples. He passed it on to that legacy to the many generations that were to come, which includes us. So this Varnashram Dham, what actually is Varnashram Dham? When you analyze it, it is how to create a society that fulfills people's material needs and inclination while elevating them spiritually. So you satisfy their material needs and uplift them spiritually. So it may not be that we have farming communities and we're pulling ploughs and everything like this. It may not be exactly like that. You know, we may be utilizing some of the aspects, like I was speaking to Vena Gopal from the farm at New Govardhan, and we were talking about cow protection and how that is a very important part to Varnashram Dham, and how we can utilize the cows in so many ways and manage cows in so many ways. And we were talking about the environment. And one of the ways that we're thinking perhaps in the future, because there is also this whole argument about cow protection and yes, what do you do with all the bullocks? And we were talking about, because people have a tendency, they keep the cows and kill the bullocks. But even in our Varnashram system, we don't kill the cow, the bullock, it's utilized. But how in today's age can you utilize a bullock? You know, when you have machinery that will plow the fields a lot easier, still you have to give engagement to the bullock. And so one of the things that is being contemplated is a generation plant, a generator. You know how you have solar power and wind power, and you have these dynamos, these generators, that a turbine that creates energy. So one of the things that's envisioned is that you have a team of bullocks that will have like about the size of a football field that will go around and turn a turbine on a regular basis. They love to work. They love to pull. And so you would do it in a humane way that they have periods of rest and periods of work, and they would turn this turbine, which would create energy, electricity, which we could use for our computers and our lighting and so on and so forth. And this is one of the ways that we can utilize a Vedic system, but using intelligence and developing Varnashram Dham. And so, these are sort of things. And he said, yeah, well, actually, Laguti Prabhu, who was up in New Govardhan and looked after the cows for many years, he already had a prototype of this working, where the bullocks would turn a pump that would pump the water from the river up to where they were needed for the crops that he was growing. So we have to become very innovative and very intelligent as to how we can utilize things and be broad-minded, as Prabhupada was. So we have to build a society that fulfills the material needs and inclinations while elevating people spiritually. This is Varnashram Dham. And this will require a great amount of maturity. All of us will have to be very mature in our understanding. Flexibility. We have to be flexible. We can't just be rigid. This is the way we're doing it. And we have to be creative in our thinking. We have to be consultative. Work with one another. Figure out ways of how to do it. And above all else, we have to have a strong sadhana. Why do we have to have a strong sadhana? Because we establish a connection with Srila Prabhupada and we establish a connection with Krishna. And that strong relationships are the prerequisite to making any project successful. So we have to establish that. Now people judge our movement. They judge our movement by observing our relationships. Above and beyond everything else, people judge us how we relate to them. and how we relate to one another. This is very, very important. So it is in our best interest to become expert in relationship skills. I know I've talked about this time and time again. We have to develop friendships. We have to develop connections with one another. We have to extend that friendship outwardly in outreach. So we should have, in due course of time, regular workshops on how to develop communication skills, how to develop assertive skills, to be strong about our spirituality. You know, people actually respect assertiveness. Like when I'm dealing with the Hindu community and someone is speaking some nonsense, I become assertive. I say, no, the Vedas don't say that. And you have to know the facts behind it. And people appreciate that assertiveness to the extent that they will put you in a leadership position. I don't argue, okay, you do. And this is the role of the devotees. We have to take leadership positions. So we have to teach assertiveness. Not that we can be little flies on the wall, you know, little insipid little people just, oh, I'm just chanting Hare Krishna. No, we have to take the lead. It is up to us if we want Varnashram to happen, which Prabhupada said has to happen. We have to be assertive, men and women. Women have to be assertive, strong, you know, in their preaching, in their direction, in their development. So these have to, and conflict resolution. We have to find ways in which we can overcome petty issues, minor conflicts. Building strong friendship relationships, keeping records of people that you've met from so long ago, keeping records, keeping friendship, keeping connections. So important. And by developing outreach programs, like chaplaincy, like interfaith, like education programs, we're doing these things. These type of preaching engagements were not prominent when Srila Prabhupada was with us. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't engage in them. That's, you know, on the contrary, there's been so much community respect and acceptance by us just participating in such programs. But we have to be in charge of those programs. You know, we have to connect with those programs. And when it happens, the doors open for more jivas to become lovers of Krishna, for more prasadam to go out the door, and for more books to be distributed, and people to learn about Krishna consciousness. That's with these outreach programs. Undoubtedly, we've made mistakes in the past. We're all young devotees, and there's a need to heal, and we have to address the effects of those mistakes and learn how to do things. But Prabhupada was the same. If something didn't work, then we change it. We work, you know. So this is very much needed. And make sure that those same mistakes don't happen again. In this way, we can go forward with new insights and optimism for the future, and not cynical and critically drawing on the past. Now, there's some leaders within ISKCON at the moment, some sannyasis, that are criticising the way that ISKCON is moving in as far as chaplaincy, connections with the Hindu community, interfaith dealings, and somehow or other they're saying that this is watering down Prabhupada's essential teachings. What they're saying is in the good old days, with the wigs and hiding and everything, we didn't do anything like this. Just go out and preach Prabhu. It isn't the time, place and circumstance. People expect us to do something more than just sitting in a temple. We have to go out and outreach. And new adjustments in our preachings have to be made all the time. And this you'll see, even as we grow older, you know, there'll be changes and different things and different approaches. And just to clarify the benefits of some of these outreach programs, like say for example the chaplaincy program that most of you are aware of, is a huge project. And we're actually out in the community. The community see that we are caring, loving people that have empathy for other individuals, not just devotees, but other individuals, that we're not keen to straight away get a person to just chant Hare Krishna. We're encouraging people to like us as a friend, and then as a friend they will come closer to Krishna consciousness. Just recently I was asked to go on an ethical board at the Peter McCullum Cancer Institute, and there somehow or other we steer the direction of how the different treatments and research that they do. Now, I mentioned before, this is a really interesting scenario. Here you have barristers, solicitors, doctors, religionists, professors, you know all those people, those type of people, doctor. And I mean, there's a Hare Krishna. They know I'm a Hare Krishna. And yet we get an opportunity to actually make a direction. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We are going to be involved in parliaments, in leadership, in so many different ways. And we set the course as to how society will go. This is our legacy. This is our legacy. But we can't do that by having narrow-minded, critical, insular, isolated ideas. We have to be broad-minded and say, yes, I'm taking Krishna consciousness to this other level. And so people see this, and people reflect on this, and people see the devotee's empathy to those in need and pain. Now, in our interfaith connection, again, there's been criticism of our interfaith, you know, and Hari Sori gave a really nice discussion on that. It's not that we give ourselves over to others' philosophy. We are grounded. That's why I said it's so important that we have strong sadhana, that we are assertive, that we're strong, that we're fixed at the lotus feet of Prabhupada and the lotus feet of the devotees in Krishna. We don't take their nonsense. Believe me, when you're doing interfaith work, when you're actually hearing their philosophy, it's like, oh my God, we are so fortunate to have the philosophy that Prabhupada has given us. And in our interfaith, if in our interfaith work, in our interfaith service, we get an opportunity to present Krishna consciousness in so many ways. And when people hear the philosophy, if they are a sincere soul, they pick it up. They say, that makes sense. That's really good. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? So then you have opportunities to go deeper and to preach in a more effective way. It's not that we're criticizing their philosophy, but we're adding to it. We're increasing to it. You know, like people often in interfaith, when I say, oh, I'm the Vaishnava Hindu representative for the Hindu community, they say, oh yeah, yeah, I'm a Hare Krishna. They say, when did you convert? I say, well, I never converted. What do you mean? I said, I still believe in the teachings of my youth, of the teachings of Krishna, of Christ and Jesus, but I've just expanded on it. I've grown, I've learnt more, and I've appreciated Jesus and his teachings even more than I ever could have within the tradition that I was born in. Oh, so you didn't reject Jesus? I said, no way. The devotees actually appreciate Jesus. They see Jesus as guru. Oh, that makes a lot of difference. So in that way you increase, and so that sets the spark off in another person's mind, because if you're in, the thing you notice when you do interfaith work, members of other religions have so many unanswered questions. You know? So tell me, in your tradition, why does a little child, when a little child is born and it has a defect or is ill, why does that happen? They haven't got an answer. They'll say something about, well, that's God's test. And it's like, you know, people have no idea. But the devotee clearly comes in and says, it's this. Oh, that makes a lot more sense. And so they're here. But if we're not there, they'll never get an opportunity to hear. So it's important that we give instruction to these people. Aside from the fact, when they show an interest, what do you do? Well, I just so happen to have a really nice little book here that explains it. And they touch the book. They take the book home. They read the book. Prabhupada said that even if someone simply touches the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, their life is changed completely. So this is it. If you give a book in friendship, when a person is inquisitive about spiritual life, we have the answers, then they actually become receptive, and that's when it's vitally important. So We have book distribution. We have prasadam distribution. I mean, we could do the catering for every single interfaith program that exists here in Melbourne. Did you know that? They love Krishna prasadam. They love Krishna prasadam. It covers all the Jewish requirements. It covers all the Muslim requirements. Everybody can eat it, and everybody loves it. With interaction. With interaction, I had to tell the cooks the other day, we have to cook more halva because we do this program with Interaction, which is a youth interfaith group that distribute prasadam to needy people in South Melbourne. We provide the food, they provide the manpower, these young people. And they said, listen, one thing all the recipients have been asking, can you please cook more of that dessert? That is so yummy. So I had to tell Prabhu that, can you cook some more prasadam? Did you do it this week? Yeah. And they love it. You know, so prasadam is going out. People love prasadam. And so, like, we have an interfaith program happening this weekend in Mornington. And it's under the guise of Indigenous understanding. So we're talking about all Indigenous groups, the Aboriginal groups, Islander groups, all this kind of stuff, which is fine, great, go for it. So we had the organisers of this interfaith group say, can you guys cook something Indigenous? What the hell, you know, we can't cook up witchetty grubs or anything like that. I mean, I said, we're vegetarians, you know. Most of these Indigenous people have different diets. And they say, oh, yeah, okay, all right. Can you cook anything? We just want you there, you know. So I was speaking to Bhakta Adrian. I said, have you had a thought about something Indigenous? And he said, yeah, I thought of something. Macadamia nuts are a fruit of a nut of Australia, so we'll make a macadamia burfi. We cover all angles. But I mean, there's going to be hundreds of people there. By the way, as far as this program is concerned, I need a couple of volunteers to do book distribution. They're expecting around about 500 or 600 people to be there, and I need a couple of ladies to man the bookstall. So I've asked you if you could possibly do it, but you're going to have to check it out. And if anybody can perhaps help, could you see me after? And we just need a couple of ladies that are keen to do a bookstall and preach to the many people that will be coming to this Indigenous interfaith program. You'll just have to put up with a bit of didgeridoo music and some Fijian dancing and other things, but that could be interesting. It's all preaching, yeah. I don't think so. No. So, Atulia, if you can do it, it'd be really good, but if anybody can help her, that'd be great. Adrian is doing the prasadam distribution, we're doing the catering for it. And so this is really important, you know. And we give association. People love us there. People like the devotees. They're clean living, honest people, and so they love our association. So the next thing is the Hindu community. There's been a real big criticism. Is ISKCON going too far into Hinduism? Mm-hmm. We're not Hindus. We're Vaishnavas. You know, we share the same texts. We share the same Vedic culture and a couple of little things. But we're lovers of Krishna. You know? We're lovers of God. And we don't give a damn for Hindu Shmindu. You know? Whatever you want to do is fine. We're there because it benefits us to grow. It benefits us to grow. And there are so many people from the Indian background that are latent bhaktas, that have just been waiting for the truth to be presented to them. You see this temple here, you know, 60% made up of Indian people, Indian-bodied people. And they're so happy that finally they get the true realization of what the Vedas actually mean. When you go to these different Hindu organizations, in no way are you swayed by their philosophy, because it is so whimsical, so iffy. You know, there's no hard and fast rules on anything. We met a person the other day at an interfaith function, Hindu gentleman, and they were providing some vegetarian food, and we said, oh, listen, you have to be careful. That's not vegetarian. This is vegetarian. We couldn't cater for that account, but I hope in the future we will. And the guy said, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm only vegetarian when I go to the temple anyway. So, you know, so it's whimsical, whimsical stuff. So, you know, within the Hindu community, what you find is, because the devotees are competent, because the devotees have got the knowledge by the blessing of Srila Prabhupada and all these great sages that are mentioned, because we have that, we are naturally put in a leadership position within the Hindu community. And people appreciate that. Guide us. Take this direction. So this is our role. Now say, for example, recently we had the opening of the cultural centre in Carrum Downs. Anybody been to the Carrum Downs Shiva Vishnu Temple? Beautiful place. Absolutely beautiful place. And they're worshipping there. They're worshipping in their own capacity, the Supreme Lord and his devotees, Lord Shiva and all the different incarnations, and to their capacity they're learning and they're worshipping. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Just as a Catholic going to a church, it's a good thing. A Jew going to a synagogue is a good thing. So it's a good thing. And so these people have just recently built a cultural centre. And we were asked to go there and represent ISKCON. I was received really nicely. They really turned it on and were very respectful. And they have a library. And so we want to present in that library, as a gift from ISKCON, a complete set of Srila Prabhupada's books, all the books pertaining to Krishna consciousness, and have them fitted into the library. I spoke with Aniruddha about this, and he said, yeah, we should actually ask the congregation, to buy these books from VBT and gift them to the Shiva Vishnu Temple, who will accept them with open arms. You know? And then all the people that go and visit this cultural centre, which is a beautiful structure, that will go through the library, will have access to Srila Prabhupada's books. Very, very important, all these different things. Similarly with the education program that we're trying to do. You know, again, the involvement with the Hindu community makes this a possibility that we can actually get a school for our children paid for by the government. If it was just the Hare Krishna movement by itself, we would have no chance. But if we link ourselves with the Hindu community, not that we succumb to the greater Hindu whatever, we are still Hare Krishnas, but we work alongside with the Hindu communities in friendship and in love and in appreciation, then we can achieve the things we want to achieve for our children. I don't want to see your children going to the slaughterhouse schools that our children had to go to. You know? I want to see your children actually have the opportunity to study the scriptures, to be taught by sincere devotees, and to have that Krishna consciousness input and education from the very start of their lives. This is what we're striving for. This is why an ashram. And then be so exemplary that we're one of the best schools here in Victoria. As the Krishnavanti school is in London. They did it exactly the same way. And it is one of the best schools in England. Educationally. Academically. And still the kids are getting this Krishna consciousness. So how can you possibly criticize that? If we're just sitting in a mindset back in the 60s and 70s, how can we possibly achieve those sort of things? It is ludicrous. To the extent that Prabhupada at one stage said, if we could get the Queen of England to come to one of our centres, I will even make sure that she can have meat to eat. Prabhupada said that. That's how important it was for him, as far as relationships are concerned, of prominent people. But guess what happened with the Krishnavanti school? At the coronation, at the anniversary of her coronation, the Diamond Jubilee, she visited our school, the Krishnavanti school. She sat there in front of the deities of Krishna Balaram. She heard the Guru Puja prayers. She got Charanamrita. How much would Prabhupada have been pleased? He wanted this. He wanted this to be recognized. And he would do anything to get that. This is what we have to do. So when there's petty-minded criticisms, get a life. Get on with your Krishna consciousness. You know, there are so many people that are now saying, well, you know, Prabhupada, the only way is Prabhupada and Ritvik this and Ritvik that. You know, all these gurus are not bona fide. Man. Have a look around. Even people that have been very close friends of mine have said to me, oh, Bhakti, you know, this whole guru system, I'm sorry, I've led you astray. You know, it's actually Prabhupada is a generating force. Of course he is. But, you know, the only bona fide guru is actually Prabhupada. There's no other guru. I said, have you had a really good look around lately? Have you seen the development and the work that the devotees are doing around the world? You know, it's just ludicrous. So he said, I'm sorry, but we can't communicate on this level anymore. I said, great. Absolutely fantastic. Because I said, to go down this track is materially makes me ill and spiritually it makes me ill. Because, you know, we never ever negate Srila Prabhupada. How can we? He's the founder of Acharya, you know. So in these various innovations and new directions, Srila Prabhupada is definitely pleased. When asked what pleases Srila Prabhupada the most, what's the thing that he always said? How many centres are open? How many devotees are coming? And how many books are being distributed? Is that happening here and now? Yes, it is. Look at the people at Mangalarti here in the mornings. Look at the people here for a Bhagavatam class. Look at the outreach work we're doing at Food for Life, at Crossways, at Gopal's, at the universities. So many things. Prabhupada is definitely very pleased. So collectively, we have to take the example of his divine grace and push on in the most effective way we know how. And if somebody comes up with another idea, we take it on board and have a listen. How can we do that? Allow Prabhupada to guide and direct us. It was interesting. Just recently, I got an opportunity to on YouTube to watch an interview with Nandakumar Prabhu. Nandakumar was one of Prabhupada's early servants, like Harisori. He was one of Prabhupada's early servants, Nandakumar, and he's a grihastha at the moment. And he was relating how his relationship with Srila Prabhupada, and he was there when Prabhupada was passing away, a couple of days before. And so Kirtananda at that stage asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we don't want you to leave. We don't think that we could ever really tackle this job of Krishna consciousness without you. We don't want you to leave. Can you please stay? And Prabhupada turned to Kirtananda and said, yes, I will stay. Now everybody assumed that that meant that he was going to remain in his physical body. And 3 days later he passed away. So this Nandakumar was meditating on that. And he made it clear, Prabhupada will never, ever lead this movement. Prabhupada is here in murti form. He's here in his books. He's here within your heart. Each and every one of us for 10,000 years to come. So we're never ever going to reject Prabhupada, but in the same token, sometimes we have to become expert for time, place and circumstance to preach in a way that will be beneficial to get the most effect. And so thereby I just wanted to make that point because it bugs me sometimes how people can spend and waste their time on criticism and cynicism and snide remarks and everything, and I just say to them, get a life, get a Krishna conscious life and push on Prabhupada's movement instead of all this nonsense. How much time they spend writing up these papers and this thing and that thing on the internet, and did you see that Prabhu? Did you see that Prabhu? Get out and preach. Do some book distribution. Get your butt mobile and get going. Prabhupada would be so upset. Can't stand it. Anyway, got that off my chest. Thank you. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
I have a few comments. First of all, I agree with you what you said. In London, and Prabhupada was there, Radha Nandanishwar GT. Radha Nandanishwar.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some problem with the hand of the GT.
Ah, oh, yes.
And he said to Ramakrishna Maharaj, just get this together to be put it in our temple. And this is the final deity in his temple, rather than initially. So Prabhupada could see the truth. And if one finger was broken, doesn't matter. One part of finger was broken, doesn't matter.
Nice,
it was so fantastic, so broad minded.
Absolutely.
Very broad. The second, what you were saying over the bringing women to this point is very important.
Oh, yeah.
Like our He went to Hollywood to take part in one of the movies, but she became a devotee because when Bhakta gave some gift, which was to be delivered to Prabhupada in the Sannyasi temple, she went there, she got contact with Prabhupada, and she became one of the best teachers for his conscience. First time when I saw her here in the Nanwan temple, this young lady speaks such a language. Then only I knew that she was Prabhupada's disciple and most intimate disciple, and he married at the age of Brijan Prabhu.
But there are many advanced devotees, not necessarily just Prabhupada's disciples.
Third thing about the food that you were saying, when we had fire in Melbourne a couple of years back, how nice the people appreciated the heritage.
Absolutely.
The lassi and the sweets and whatever you gave. It was so interesting.
This is, we have to do more of that. Eventually, you have to come to the understanding that eventually we are going to be running this planet. There's no two ways about it, in one way or another, and we have to accommodate all these different people. And some people will say, oh, come on, Bhakta. But it's true. We hold the truth. And if we just place our trust in Prabhupada, we can change the lives of so many people. They don't have to suffer, but it depends on how enthusiastic and how strong we are to push it on.
Therefore, what I want to say, we are very glad to accept your leader for
this. Ah, no, that's not. No. Any other comments or questions?
Thank you.
Anyway, it was a bit of a long one, but I hope I haven't offended anybody. Yes, Bhakti? You got something to say?
Yeah, can we get some sponsorship in
books? Yeah. I'm going to be putting in. Yeah, good one, Bhakti.
Last year we didn't distribute so many because we were expecting people to buy, and everybody else calling it interface calls. Everybody else is just giving the books out, because we're not giving them away. Didn't you find that? Because hardly we could sell any books. So if we have a few people even that says, okay, I'll give $100, I'll give $100, I'll give $100, then we can just hand them out.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Bhakti. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Can we organise something like that? Where is...
anybody who wants to put up their hand?
Nobody yet. We'll work out something.
I'll coordinate.
Huh?
I'll coordinate.
Can you coordinate it? It's really important. These are really nice people there. You know, at these interfaith programs, these are captive audience. These are people that are not interested in the movies or what the latest fashions is. These people are interested in spiritual diversity. And so we have to be there. We offer them, you know, the ultimate. But like Bhakti said, it is true that they expect to get things free, and so we should have a couple of little books that we can give away free. Maybe I'll speak to Jai later on. Maybe we've got some books that we can also give free. Anyway, Prabhus, I have to stop. It's 9:15. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
I'm looking at $2,000 to get everything. I want Burjan's books there. I want Jayapataka's books. I want as many books as we can give to fill up that library. Okay? So I figured if I can get $2,000 from the devotees, that will be a good start and a good display. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Leelamrita, Bhagavatam, several Bhagavad Gita's, Burjan's books, Satsvarupa's books, you know, like that. All the, you know, Harinam Chintamani, Banu's books, you know, like that. Okay? So I figured there'd be about $2,000. If we got more, we got more. Is that right? So we're going to have a talk about